Well, that was unexpected. The Melbourne Renegades have had their first turn lifting the Big Bash League trophy, and at certain stages on Sunday afternoon, it certainly did not look like that would be happening as they edged over the Melbourne Stars, who collapsed in spectacular fashion. And on today's edition of the Follow On podcast, which is proudly brought to you by McDonald's, I'm loving it. We're going to unpack the grand final that took place between the two Big Bash Melbourne teams. And in order to do that, I, Phil Pryor, am joined by cricketing correspondent for the Fox Sports website down in Melbourne, also Big Bash expert, Matt Barmer. Welcome back, Matthew.
Thanks for having me, Phil. It certainly has been an amazing 24 hours in Melbourne, that's fair to say.
So you were there. Talk to me about everything that unfolded, and I can only just imagine how the crowd was reacting. Obviously, you know, red fans and green fans after one of the greatest collapses in probably cricket history, it's fair to say.
Yeah, I don't think we'll see a game ever like that ever again, and I don't think many of the players had seen a game pan out like that. You speak to a few of them after the game, and none of them had seen a collapse just pan out the way it did on Sunday afternoon. But it was an amazing atmosphere at Marvel Stadium for an all-Melbourne final. It was just perfect. The conditions are great. It looked fantastic with the roof open on TV and at the ground, because it just adds a little bit rather than the sort of the dull with the roof shut and not the natural light shining in on the ground. So it was good to see there was 40,000 there. They packed it in at Marvel Stadium and they were cheering really loudly. And I guess when the Renegades started getting on a bit of a run on it, the crowd grew louder and louder. And right in that last over, when it was all but certain that the Renegades would win, it really started building and got to that climax when the last ball had been bowled and the Renegades had won.
Yeah, obviously, as everyone probably knows now, the Stars were none for 93 when things went a bit pear-shaped. At what point did it feel like perhaps the expectation of an easy Stars victory turned to, hang on a second, they're in real strife here?
Yeah, there was a couple of overs in the middle of that Melbourne Stars run chase. I mean, Harry Gurney bowled an over where there was no boundary and the run rate sort of had crept up from 7 to 7.6. And while you never thought they were in any doubt, when you got 10 wickets in hand, you only need 50. And then the next over, Marcus Stoinis and Ben Dunk, they got a boundary each. So it sort of looked like a, you know, any bit of the Renegades momentum that they'd gained in the over, in the 11th over from Gurney, had gone. But Cameron Boyce came back on. He got whacked in his first two overs, but he got the wicket of Marcus Stoinis. And then the next over, Pete Hanscom went out. And then the next over, Ben Dunk went out. So in the space of three overs, they'd lost three wickets. And that was probably when the game was on the line. The Stars needed 47 runs off 30 balls, which that's 9.4 and over. It had just crept up really quickly. But when you look at the Melbourne Stars batting lineup, when you got a guy called Glenn Maxwell at the crease, you sort of go, well, they're in with a shot here. And we saw what he did in the last group game where he hit a mountain of runs in the last four overs against the Sydney Sixers. Glenn Maxwell's at the crease. The Melbourne Stars were certainly in the game, whether the run rate required was 6, 8, 9, 10, whatever it was. He was probably the man that was going to do it. And it was an 18-year-old kid that was standing underneath the high ball that managed to take the catch, and Glenn Maxwell was on his way.
Yeah, was it nerves, do you reckon, that cost a couple of those batsmen their wickets? Or was it, you know, a case of the pressure getting to them in that moment? I think three or four of those dismissals were skied and thus caught. I think maybe, you know, two or three of those wickets were players trying to just whip it over the square boundary. What can you put all that down to? It's just baffling.
It's a bit of everything, to be honest. These guys have played so many games of T20 cricket. So, you know, they've been used to all different scenarios, having to come out and bat and trying to whack the ball around. But none a bit like this. Losing three wickets and three overs isn't very common. But I think I heard someone on radio today talk about it, and it was a bit saying, you know, if you're sitting in this, I think it's Dave Hussey, you're sitting in the sheds at sort of 6 or 7 in the batting lineup and the two openers are absolutely smacking them. Well, you're probably thinking you're not going to bat at this rate and we've got the premiership all sewn up. So to lose those three wickets in succession didn't help. But, you know, as I said before, Glenn Maxwell at the crease, but he was only going to play one way and that was his natural game, and that's being aggressive. And, hey, if he was going to go out, that was going to be the way. He was going to get caught on the boundary, you would think. So that was the way he fell in the end. Macca Harvey stood under a high ball at deep backward square leg and took the catch. And that was probably it. Once Maxwell went out and it was Gotch and Maddinson at the crease, they needed 11 and a half and over with four overs left, and it was probably game over by then.
At that point, yeah, good call. I think on Friday night there was almost 360 runs scored in the Renegades' last over win over the Sydney Sixers. But then on Sunday it was an afternoon game rather than an evening game, so perhaps no dew on that surface. And perhaps, you know, maybe the result of a couple of those players skying. I know a couple of those were full toss deliveries in any case, but the pitch must have been a tad slower on Sunday afternoon versus on Friday night. Would that be fair to say, Matt?
Yeah, well, I think that's always a given at Marvel Stadium or any of those drop-in wickets. The more times they get used, the slower they generally get. So
yeah. The
game that they used against the Sixers was the different wicket that they hadn't used for the other games. So it was probably always going to be a bit quicker, and it wasn't a surprise to see it run a bit slower on Sunday. But I think that's why Aaron Finch ended up batting first. And runs on the board in finals are massive, and it made a big point yesterday about it, and it probably showed that the pressure gets to your chasing, even if you need the easiest of targets at certain points in games. They just choked, and that's as simple as that. They were in front of the game, and then they lost the game in the space of four or five overs. And batting first, those runs on the board, it's valuable, and it's a big lesson that while T20 cricket during the season is a lot about, you know, chasing down big scores, a lot of the teams batting first are great chances of winning games.
Do you have a take on cricket being played at that Marvel Stadium? Because I suppose there seems to be general sentiment that it is a slower deck and harder to score runs on compared to some of the more traditional pitches around Australia.
Yeah, yes and no. I think you look at most of the venues in the BBL, they're all pretty much drop-ins now anyway. So you just get that with wickets, and it's down to the curators to prepare the best track they can possible. At the end of the day, it probably suited the Renegades bowling style. Cameron Boyce had one of his best seasons in the Big Bash. He's bowling his leg spinners. Dan Christian bowls sort of medium pace, little cutters. And then they've got Harry Gurney, who they brought across from England, that bowls every type of slow ball that's in the continent. So while the Renegades pitch probably got whacked a fair few times in the season for only being 130, 140, I think at the end of the day, that's their game style and it suited their cricket. So, you know, if it's their home ground, why not prepare a wicket that sort of suits them or that they're adapted to? And at the end of the day, the conditions are the same for both teams. So it wasn't going to change much. If the Melbourne Stars were good enough, they would have made the runs.
Yeah, for sure. We will get to Hobart's loss on Thursday night in just a moment, but it was the two Melbourne teams that made the grand final. And it's fair to say that pre-season, no one saw really either of these two Melbourne sides as one of the major title contenders. It was all about the Adelaide Strikers, the Perth Scorchers, and perhaps even the Hobart Hurricanes. What was it about these Melbourne teams that that you think emerged into the grand finalists?
It's amazing for the Stars, considering they finished bottom of the ladder last year and they were absolutely woeful at times. So for them, it was a big rejuvenation. Luke Wright went out. You know, Kevin Peterson had retired. There was a lot of changes in their lineup. Ben Dunk signed a five-year deal last year, and he looked woeful at times this tournament. But 57 yesterday, you could say, hey, he's probably kept himself in with a good shot of coming back again next year and opening the batting for them. Guys like Marcus Stoinis and Glenn Maxwell were good throughout the tournament. Peter Hanscom probably didn't have as well of a tournament as he would have liked, but it was hard for those three, chopping and changing from Australian selection back into the Melbourne Stars side. But I think for them, and one of their best recruits was their leg spinner, Sandeep Lamachani, and to bring out an unknown spinner or an unknown quality is always hard for the opposition batting sides. And a bowler like him kept them in the game. He averaged under 20, took a lot of wickets. He was very vital alongside Adam Zampa, sort of the dual leg spin combination. And I don't think many expected the pair of them would bowl a lot together at times and really restrict but take wickets at the same time. So everything sort of clicked in that department. The thing is with the Stars is they are the Stars. They've got some of the best players in the comp, but when these guys don't fire, they probably struggle, and that's what they probably did throughout the tournament at times. So for them to make the final, it wasn't surprising, and for them to get through to the actual final, well, we knew if their star power stood up in the semi-final, which they did, they were always going to make it. The Renegades were a completely different kettle of fish. If you look at their squad coming into the summer, you would have gone Aaron Finch and Marcus Harris would be walking out in the first game opening the batting. Well, that wasn't to be with both of them playing for Australia. So
yeah,
they completely rejuvenated their list. They brought in Sam Harper, who didn't even have a contract at the start of the year. He ended up as their leading run. He ended up as their leading run scorer and knocked the gloves off Tim Ludeman at one stage. And he ended up keeping for most of the tournament. Mackenzie Harvey, 18-year-old, played, but they just, again, they relied on those experienced heads that they had, guys like Cameron White, Tom Cooper, Dan Christian. All these guys have played a lot of T20 cricket in their history, and they mixed the young really well with the old, and I think that's what wins you T20 games, is that experience and the know-how to win games of cricket. So that's what made the Renegades so good, is that they were pretty flexible with the young kids, but the really experienced heads held them in good stead throughout the tournament.
Yeah, I have to agree with that, with all that. That is the voice of Matt Barmer, our cricket correspondent down in Melbourne, BBL expert. My name is Phil Pryor. This is the Follow On podcast, proudly brought to you by McDonald's. I'm loving it. Matty, it was good to see at the back end of the Big Bash as well, all of the Aussie one-day stars, or almost all of the Aussie one-day stars on show. Pity, obviously, that some of the international and overseas players had already kind of returned home and returned to their own international commitments. What did you make of the final series playing out in mid-Feb?
I didn't mind it, and I think it worked okay considering it was on a weekend, in a sense that sort of Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you're always going to get a crowd, you're always going to have people watching. So I think that worked out okay in the end. Whether it's the first week in Feb or whether it's the second or third week in Feb like we saw this year, I don't think it makes a difference. I think you're always going to draw a crowd. And if you had said at the start of the season you're going to get 40,000 to the BBL final at Marvel Stadium, that the roof's going to be open, it's going to be a glorious day of cricket, and it's going to come down to the last over in a game like that, well, you're taking it every single day of the week. So there's no doubting that Cricket Australia and the Big Bash overall would have been really happy with that, how it played out. Yeah, there could have been some better scheduling throughout the tournament, but going from 10 games to a 14-game tournament, there was always going to be a lot of learnings in BBL 08. So things will get rejuvenated for BBL 09. At the end of the day, regarding the international players, that's down to the clubs and how they want to structure their list. Clubs know that these guys are likely to leave for international duties, and they've got dates knocked in. And the Renegades knew that Mohammad Nabi was probably going to have to go back for Afghanistan's tour to India. Those dates have been set in store longer than the BBL have. So when they come down to working out who they want to contract and what they want to do, well, they've got to have that in the back of their mind. Yes, it's not ideal, but there's no, you know, the IPL is probably one of the only few leagues that probably has that window where there's not a lot of international cricket. Unfortunately, England's test schedule normally clashes with the back end of the IPL, which affects a lot of their England players that are in the IPL that have to sort of return back to England and go play a bit of county cricket. But
there's no
ideal factor at the end of the day. But you go for your best players that you can. And if you think that you're just going to grab a guy like the Renegades do with Harry Gurney, I reckon you speak to the whole population who watch the BBL. Half of them wouldn't, more than half, wouldn't know who Harry Gurney was at the start of the tournament. And he's almost bowled them to victory yesterday in that final. So if you go out with a specific need and a specific range of skills that you need, the Stars needed another spinner, so they brought in a Nepalese spinner. You know, these unknown guys are sometimes the better players to bring in rather than the ones that everyone have seen through the IPL and we've seen for years in the Big Bash circuit and the IPL and everything like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously an appetite, though, for the big stars around the world. You know, finding that balance, I suppose, is maybe something that Cricket Australia can look at. Is it naive to be optimistic that moving forward, as the Big Bash, you know, continues to gain international recognition, that perhaps Cricket Australia can, you know, openly communicate with the ICC and ensure that there aren't as the schedule isn't as busy this time of year for other international cricketing nations, or is it just the unfortunate reality that in December, January, February, you know, other countries around the world want good cricket on as well?
Yeah, I think it's more of a case of the latter. You're always going to get New Zealand wanting to play a test or those sort of games in their own summer. South Africa's the exact same. We're the same in our own summer, so. I'm not surprised to see, you know, the best players around the country doing bits and pieces all over the shop. I think what we will see is probably a bit more funds to go into that international market and for players to, and clubs, I guess, to have more money to spend on their international imports.
But, to give some of those players something serious to think about as well.
Yeah, correct, correct. But I think at the same time, we could see sort of short-term deals. We might see, we're throwing up the big names like AB de Villiers. We might see him come out and play four games at the start of the tournament before South Africa T20 leagues kick in or the Pakistan Super League kicks in. He might play four or five games to warm up for that sort of tournament in the Big Bash playing for the Sydney Thunder or whoever he's playing for example, and they have to sign guys on four or five game contracts type of things. I think we might see a bit more of that. Mm. You know, the Renegades did that. They had Melbourne Nami for 14 games, but then they had Usman Chinwari for seven, Harry Gurney for seven. So
yeah,
they had three internationals in a sense. So I think we could see that sort of those sort of deals happen a bit more often in years to come.
Yeah, as a fan, if I know that de Villiers is only here for four games, I'm going to make sure I get down there and see him. And I've got no issue with the fact that he's only signed on for a few games. I suppose the other side of the coin is coaches want consistency and stability throughout their team. So, you know, can we get everyone to agree? Who knows? Matt Barmer, one more issue that I think we need to raise before we wrap up this quickfire Big Bash 08 recap. Is the Hobart Hurricanes the dominant number one team in the competition, finishing on top of the ladder throughout and at the end of the regular season and then being bundled out in the semi-final, which has been the case so many years now in this tournament, the number one team hosting a semi, getting bundled out with only the one chance to reach the final? Is it time that we need to give that top team a second chance and look at a bit of a finals rejig?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think it is because, especially in a 14-game tournament, if you go through and you win 10 games and you only lose four games, you've probably shown that you've been the best tournament, best team in the tournament consistently. How it'll structure in, I don't know what the plan is there for Cricket Australia and with the broadcast and the networks, but I think it makes sense to have the double chance for the Hobart Hurricanes in a sense. But T20 cricket is all about the best team on the day. And at the end of the day, if Hobart or whoever finished on top wasn't on their game, they were always going to lose to whether it's the fourth team or probably even the seventh or eighth team in the competition. That's just how T20 cricket works. So at the same time, Hobart could win every game in the season, lose the first final, but they could lose the second final just as easily as they lost the first final and get knocked out in the straight sets. So I think it is time to have one, but I can see at the end of the day, T20 cricket, it's so unpredictable. You don't know what's going to happen. And even the game of the weekend, you just never know. Things change really quickly. And that's the funny game of cricket, that there's no certainty and things change pretty quickly. So, yeah, I think we will see a change, but it's sort of a watch this space, no doubt.
I mean, it has happened so many times. I wish I had the exact figure on me, but something like seven out of the eight tournaments have seen that top seed go out in the semis. What makes you feel like this could be the year that that Cricket Australia finally reacts to it?
Oh, I think it's more probably the 14 game factor scenario probably weighs into it a bit. When you've got an eight game season or even a 10 game season, you might win six or seven of them, but you know, winning 10 games is a big allotment that we've never really seen a team do before. So
yeah,
they'll probably stiff in that sort of sense, but as I said before, that's T20 cricket. If you're off your game, even just a little bit, you lose games of cricket, whether you're the best team or you're the worst team.
Yeah, so rewarding, you know, further consistency. I mean, the finals happen over a week span. So in this case, the semis happen Thursday, Friday, and the grand final on Sunday. So maybe we have that preliminary final on the Friday, and then earlier in the week we see the qualifier and the eliminating final. I reckon it will be easy enough to manoeuvre things around a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. Everyone looks at the IPL as the number one league in the world, and the Big Bash is probably given the second league, best T20 league in the world. So if it's good enough for the IPL and they do it, I think we'll see the BBL introduce it, whether it's BBL 09 or BBL 10. I definitely can see it in the next two seasons, that's for sure.
Yeah, fair enough. I think we'll have to, we might leave it there. Matt Barmer, anything else you'd like to add in and around the Big Bash League before we wrap this up?
Not really. I just think that the fact that this year they probably got the schedule a lot better in the fact that there wasn't a lot of clash with the Australian games that we sort of saw towards the back end of last season where the best players went and had to go play for Australia. Well, this year I think they got the schedule fantastic. That didn't really happen. There was a little bit of a crossover early January or mid-January, but once those sort of games against India finished the one-day series for Australia, it was pretty clear sailing, which was really good from a Big Bash point of view.
Yeah, well said. That was the voice of Matt Barmer of the foxsports.com.au website, contributor of cricket, and then, of course, footy during the AFL season. So make sure you look out for all of his work. This has been the Follow On podcast, proudly brought to you by McDonald's. I'm loving it. My name is Phil Pryor. A big thank you to all our listeners out there. We will still be podcasting for the next month or two because there's international cricket just around the corner. Australia heads off to India and then off to Pakistan, I believe, in around March as well, as we build up to, of course, the World Cup in the middle of the year. So stay tuned. Make sure you've subscribed to the Follow On podcast and enjoy plenty more content as we continue building up to that World Cup, as I mentioned. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Until next time, that's a wrap.